Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Winter storms in Alaska aren't unusual. Most of us here know how to handle a snowstorm, even the fierce ones. I'd been living alone in this house for about 5 years, a modest place on the edge of the woods, far enough from the city to feel quiet, but close enough to make the commute manageable. That night, though, the storm hit harder than usual. It was a Friday in late December 2017, and I'd closed up the store early, sending my staff home before the roads got too bad. By the time I got back, the snow was falling thick, turning my driveway into a white, uneven mess. After shoveling just enough to park, I went inside, locked up, and turned on the heater. The wind howled outside, rattling the windows now and then, but I found the sound comforting. I made myself a mug of cocoa and settled into my worn recliner, the kind that leans too far back if you're not careful. It was shaping up to be the kind of evening I liked. No noise, no people, just me and the storm. Around midnight, I was halfway through a random documentary on glaciers when I heard a knock. I hit pause, sitting up straighter. I live pretty far out, and my nearest neighbor is at least a quarter mile down the road. Visitors at midnight? Not exactly common. I got up, pulling the curtain aside to peek out the front window. Snow was falling heavily, blurring the porch light. No one was there, just the wind swirling flurries across the yard. Then I saw boot prints. They led right up to my door and back down the steps. They were fresh too, sharp edges, no snow filling them in yet. Opening the door wasn't an option. The wind would have blasted snow straight into my entryway. Besides, something about those prints unsettled me. I stood there for a moment, my hand hovering over the deadbolt, listening. Nothing but the wind. After a minute, I locked the door again and went back to my recliner, trying to brush it off. Maybe someone got lost. Maybe it was just a random hiker. But deep down, it didn't sit right. About an hour later, the second knock came. This time, it wasn't at the front door. It came from the side of the house, near the kitchen window. I got up quickly, my pulse picking up, and grabbed the flashlight I kept by the door. The kitchen window was completely frosted over, so I couldn't see much. I flicked off the lights inside and aimed the flashlight outside. Nothing. The snow outside that window was untouched. No footprints, no signs of movement. But the knock had been real. I was sure of it. I stayed there for a while, flashlight in hand, scanning the yard. A few minutes passed, and I convinced myself it was a tree branch, or maybe even the storm playing tricks. I turned the lights back on, locked all the windows, and went to bed, leaving the flashlight on the nightstand. I woke up to a third knock. This one was louder. It came from the back of the house, near the sliding glass door that led to the deck. My heart sank as I sat up, straining to hear over the wind. Sliding out of bed, I grabbed the flashlight and crept down the hallway. The sliding door was locked. I'd checked it earlier, but the curtain wasn't drawn. I paused a few feet away and peered out. The deck was empty. The snow-covered deck beyond the glass was undisturbed. No tracks, no signs of anyone standing there. But the knocks had been real, three sharp raps, as clear as day. I stayed there for a while, staring out into the swirling snow. The only thing visible was the faint outline of the woods beyond the yard. The rest of the night was worse. The knocks didn't stop. They came every hour, sometimes louder, sometimes softer. Front door, side windows, back door. They moved around the house like someone was circling it. At one point, I thought I heard faint footsteps crunching through the snow, but when I looked out, there was nothing there. The storm was too strong to go outside, and even if I could, what was I supposed to do? Chase after invisible knocks in a blizzard? I spent the rest of the night on edge, flashlight in hand, every light in the house on. By morning, the storm had eased, the wind had died down, and pale sunlight filtered through the overcast sky. I stepped outside cautiously, bundled in my thick coat and boots. The yard was quiet, the snow deep but undisturbed in some areas. But as I walked around the house, I started to notice footprints. They weren't just at the front door or the deck. They were everywhere. Boot prints circled the house, weaving between the windows and doors. Whoever had made them had walked the perimeter several times, stopping at every entrance, every pane of glass. But when I reached the edge of the woods, what stood out most was that the footprints continued deep into the forest, weaving between trees. So I decided to follow them. About 200 yards in, the footprints changed. I stopped dead in my tracks when I saw them merge with something else. Tire tracks. The faint imprint of a snowmobile had flattened the snow, the path curving off into the distance. I crouched down to look closer. The tracks weren't fresh. There was a thin layer of snow covering them, likely from the storm that had continued into the early hours of the morning. Whoever it was had planned this. They'd left just before daylight, knowing the snowfall would cover their escape. I stood there for a while, staring at the path, debating whether to go further. But the snowmobile's trail was faint, barely visible anymore, and I wasn't exactly equipped to trek through the woods for miles. Back at the house, I called the police. Two officers arrived about an hour later, a younger guy and an older one who looked clearly no stranger to the unforgiving cold of Alaskan winters. They listened as I explained what had happened, their expressions shifting from skeptical to serious when I mentioned the snowmobile tracks. The younger officer raised an eyebrow. Could be kids messing around. The older officer shook his head. Not a lot of kids riding through blizzards at night, he said, giving the younger guy a look. They followed the tracks into the woods but returned within 15 minutes. The snow had almost completely filled them in by then. Too faint to follow, the older officer said. But this wasn't random. Whoever it was knew exactly what they were doing. A lump formed in my throat. What do you think they wanted? Hard to say. Could have been someone looking for shelter, or maybe they just wanted to scare you. That word didn't even begin to cover it. After the officers left, the unease settled over me like the heavy snow outside. I couldn't stop picturing the footprints.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Circling my house, and the snowmobile waiting like a getaway vehicle. This wasn't some harmless prank. Whoever it was had planned this, stalking around my home during the storm, knowing I wouldn't venture outside. By mid-afternoon, I knew I wouldn't make it through another night without doing something more, so I grabbed my jacket and headed into town. The nearest gun store was about 20 miles away. The drive felt surreal, like I was stepping into someone else's life. I'd never been one for firearms, but after last night, the thought of being unarmed if someone came back wasn't something I could live with. I left the store with a 9mm handgun, a hunting rifle, and enough ammunition to feel like I had a fighting chance if things ever escalated. The clerk even threw in a quick lesson on proper handling and storage, though his parting words stuck with me more than anything else. Don't go looking for trouble, but make sure you're ready if it finds you. That night marked a turning point for me. From then on, the handgun stayed on the nightstand, within easy reach, and the rifle remained propped by the front door, ready for anything. I'd always loved living out in the woods, the solitude, the quiet, the sense of freedom, and I wasn't about to let some creep take that away from me. Sure, I was rattled. Who wouldn't be? But I'm not the kind of person to back down. If someone tried pulling something like that again, they'd get a much different reception than a house shrouded in darkness. I refused to let fear take over. This was my home, my slice of quiet in an otherwise chaotic world, and I wasn't going to let anyone make me feel like a prisoner in my own space. I'd always loved the stillness of winter storms, the way the snow blanketed everything and made the woods feel like a different world. Now, I saw the storms differently. They weren't just peaceful, they were a cover, a shield for anyone lurking just beyond the tree line. But instead of retreating, I made a choice. If anyone wanted to come back and test their luck, I'd be ready to welcome them. This time, on my terms. Because out here, in the quiet of the woods, you either learn to protect what's yours, or you let someone else take it from you. And I wasn't about to let that happen. I still don't know who they were or what they wanted. Maybe it was a prank. Maybe it was something worse. But every time the snow starts falling and the wind howls through the woods, I find myself checking the locks, looking at the rifle by the door, and wondering if they'll come back. And if they do, this time, I'll be ready. Duluth winters were brutal, sure, but for an avid ice fisherman like me, they were also a playground. There was something deeply satisfying about braving the elements, cutting a hole in the ice, and waiting patiently for that tug on the line. Nothing but the sound of the wind and the creak of the ice beneath you. Growing up, my dad and I would brave the bitter Minnesota winters to fish together, his old thermos of coffee steaming between us. Even after he passed, ice fishing became my way of feeling close to him. That's what brought me to the lake that day. It had been a tough week at work, tight deadlines, endless emails, and the kind of stress that sticks with you. The forecast predicted a blizzard, but I wasn't worried. The ice was thick, solid enough to hold trucks, let alone me and my gear. By the time I arrived, the snow was coming down hard. Visibility was maybe 20 feet, tops. The wind howled as I hauled my sled onto the ice, the sharp cold cutting through my gloves. It was the kind of weather most people would avoid, but for me, it was perfect. No crowds, no distractions, just me and the lake. After drilling my holes and setting up my shack, I settled in. The propane heater hummed softly, warming the space as I baited my line. The storm outside made everything feel even more isolated. I leaned back in my chair, letting the quiet wrap around me like a blanket. That peace didn't last long. About an hour in, I noticed something through the small window of the shack, a dark figure standing in the distance. Through the swirling snow, I could just make out the outline of a man. He wasn't moving, just standing there, facing my direction. At first, I thought it might be another fisherman, but as I squinted through the frost-covered window, I realized there hadn't been any other vehicles in the lot. Whoever he was, he'd gotten here on foot. Maybe he was just checking the ice. Maybe he didn't have a shack and was out braving the elements. Still, there was something about the way he stood there that made the hairs on the back of my neck prickle. I looked away for a moment, focusing on my line. When I looked back, he was gone. The wind howled louder, rattling the walls of the shack. I told myself I was being irrational. The storm was playing tricks on my eyes, nothing more. But no matter how much I tried, I couldn't convince myself I was the only one there. About 20 minutes later, I heard footsteps crunching on the ice, stopping just outside the shack. I reached for the zipper, pulling it open just enough to peek out. He was there, tall, bundled in a heavy coat and hat, his face mostly hidden by a scarf. He stood a few feet away, his breath visible in the freezing air. "You shouldn't be out here," he said, his voice deep and rough. I was caught off guard. "What?" "The ice," he said, gesturing toward the lake. "It's not safe." I frowned, looking down at the holes I'd drilled. The ice was at least 10 inches thick, plenty safe for fishing. "It's solid," I said. "Not today," he said. There was something about his tone that sent a chill through me, not just from the cold, but from the weight of his words. He wasn't trying to scare me, he was warning me. Before I could respond, he turned and started walking away. "Hey," I called after him. "Wait." He didn't stop. Within seconds, he disappeared into the storm, leaving me standing there, confused and uneasy. I went back inside, but I couldn't focus. His words kept replaying in my head. What did he mean? Not today? The ice was fine, wasn't it? That's when I heard it, a loud, echoing crack. I jumped to my feet. The ice groaned beneath me, loud. I grabbed my gear and bolted out of the shack, the snow whipping against my face. The cracks grew louder, spreading like spiderwebs across the ice. The ground beneath me shifted, and I nearly lost my footing. I ran as fast as I could, my boots slipping on the slick surface. Behind me, the ice gave way with a deafening crash. My shack tilted, one side sinking into the freezing water. I didn't stop until I reached solid ground, my chest heaving and my legs trembling. I turned back to the lake, my breath fogging in the frigid air. The shack was gone, swallowed by the icy water. But that wasn't what caught my attention. Out on the ice, where I'd seen the man, there was nothing. No footprints, no tracks, no sign he'd ever been there. I stood there for a long time, staring at the empty lake. Who was he? How did he know the ice wasn't safe, and where had he gone? When I got home, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I asked around, but no one else had been out on the lake that day. A buddy of mine mentioned local legends about spirits warning people of danger, but I wasn't sure I believed that. All I know is I haven't been back to that lake since. Maybe someday I will. But for now, I'm sticking to solid ground. When you spend most of your days on bustling job sites, surrounded by the noises of power tools and the chatter of coworkers, you start to appreciate the rare moments of quiet. Building houses with a crew is rewarding, sure, but from time to time you need some quiet time. That's probably why I didn't think twice about booking a remote cabin on Mount Hood for a long weekend. I needed a break from the constant noise, both literal and figurative, of my job. A snowstorm had been forecasted, but that just made it more appealing. A cozy cabin, a warm fire, and the sound of snow piling up outside? Perfect. I arrived late in the afternoon, just as the first flakes started to fall. The driveway hadn't been plowed in who knows how long, so I had to park a little way down the road and trudge up with my gear. The cabin looked exactly like the pictures, and the whole place was beautiful. The key had been left in a lockbox by the door. When I stepped inside, it was colder than I expected. The heating was on, but it was faint, probably a setting the rental company kept to save energy. I dropped my bags in the living room, flicked on a few lights, and immediately started a fire in the wood stove to warm the place up. That's when I noticed the first odd thing. There were dirty dishes stacked in the sink, a couple of mugs, a plate, and a pan with dried up grease. I frowned, thinking maybe the cleaning crew had been rushed or hadn't made it out because of the snow. Not a great start, but whatever. I wasn't going to let a few dishes ruin my weekend. I washed them quickly and moved on. But the weirdness didn't stop there. When I went to the bedroom to unpack, I noticed the bed looked off. The blanket and sheets were rumpled, and the pillow was indented, like someone had just been lying there. I leaned closer and pressed my hand to the mattress. It was warm. Now, I'm not someone who jumps to conclusions, but I'd be lying if I said that didn't put me on edge. Still, I told myself it was probably just residual warmth from the heating system. I shook it off, put my stuff away, and decided to settle in. The evening passed perfectly. I cooked dinner, sipped on a whiskey by the fire, and lost myself in a book I'd brought along. Outside, the snowstorm picked up, blanketing the woods in white and muffling every sound except the wind. Around 10 p.m., I decided to call it a night. The cabin was small, so I double-checked the doors and windows to make sure everything was locked. Satisfied, I crawled into bed and turned off the light. Somewhere around midnight, I started hearing faint noises. At first, I thought it was just the wind or the snow shifting on the roof. But then there was a soft creak, like a floorboard groaning under weight. I sat up, but the sound didn't come again. It's an old cabin, I muttered to myself. Wood expands, things shift, relax. Still, I grabbed my flashlight from the nightstand and gave the cabin a quick once-over. Nothing. The doors were still locked, the windows secure, and the snow outside was undisturbed. So I went back to bed and eventually drifted off. When I woke the next morning, the storm had passed. I brewed a cup of coffee and stepped onto the porch to take in the view. That's when I saw the footprints. They started at the back door, clear and distinct, leading away from the cabin and into the woods. My stomach tightened. I set my coffee down and walked around to get a better look. The prints were fresh, crisp edges untouched by snowfall. They went straight from the back door to the woods, disappearing into the trees. And then it hit me. The faint noises I'd heard during the night. Whoever had left those dirty dishes and the warm bed hadn't left the cabin before I arrived. They'd been hiding somewhere, waiting until I fell asleep to sneak out. I stared at the footprints for what felt like forever. a sick realization settling in. They'd been there, lying low, watching for the right moment to leave. The weird noises I'd brushed off last night weren't the wind or the creaking of an old cabin. They'd been someone moving around. I decided to call the rental company. Their response was immediate. Apologies poured out from the person on the other end of the line, mixed with excuses about how they didn't know anyone had been squatting in the property. They offered me a full refund, practically begged me to leave, but I wasn't about to cut my trip short over this. "I'll stay the last night," I said firmly. There was a pause before the person on the phone hesitantly offered some advice. "All the doors in the cabin have heavy manual locks on the inside," they said. "They can't be opened from the outside. Just lock them all before you go to bed, okay? That way, even if the person comes back, they won't be able to get in." Okay, it was something. After hanging up, I spent the rest of the afternoon securing the place. I checked every door, every window, testing the locks to make sure they worked. The cabin's age worked in my favor. Those heavy-duty manual locks were solid, built to last, and had no way of being picked or tampered with from the outside. By the time I was done, the place felt like a fortress. That night, the wind howled outside, and the snowstorm raged on, but the cabin was silent. I sat by the fireplace with a cup of coffee. The thought of a stranger in the cabin stayed with me long after. Where had they been hiding? The attic? The crawl space? Or had they slipped out right under my nose? I didn't sleep much that night. Every so often, I'd hear a noise, a branch snapping outside, the wind rattling a window, and my eyes would dart to the door, expecting to see someone trying to force their way in. But the locks held, and the cabin remained secure. In the morning, I packed my things and left. I didn't bother calling the rental company again. I'd had enough of their apologies. As I drove down the snowy mountain road, I couldn't help but look in my rearview mirror, expecting to see someone standing in the distance, watching me leave. That experience stuck with me. Even now, when I rent cabins, I make sure to inspect every inch of the place before settling in, and pay extra attention to any sign that someone might have been there before me. Because the truth is, you can never be too careful. Even in the most remote, peaceful places, you're never really as alone as you think you are. Driving through Taos, New Mexico in March is usually breathtaking. The snow-dusted mountains against the endless sky, the way the light breaks through the clouds, it's a photographer's dream. That's why I was out there, despite the forecast warning of a snowstorm. I'd done this kind of thing before, hop in my car, chase a scenic spot, and snap some shots. This time, I was hoping to capture the dramatic contrast of the storm rolling in over the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. The roads were already getting slippery when I turned onto a winding back road that hugged the mountain's edge. It wasn't part of my original plan, but I'd seen a promising view and couldn't resist. The problem with chasing the perfect shot is that you don't always think about practicalities, like whether the road you're on will still be passable in an hour. And as the snow started falling harder, that decision came back to bite me. The snow was relentless, thick flakes sticking to my windshield faster than my wipers could clear them. The road narrowed, flanked by steep drop-offs on one side and towering evergreens on the other. I debated turning around, but when I tried to find a spot to do so, my tires hit a patch of ice hidden beneath the snowdrift. The car slid sideways, and before I could react, I felt the crunch of snow swallowing my wheels. I was stuck. I tried everything, rocking the car, spinning the wheels, even shoveling with my hands, but it was no use. The snow had me firmly in its grip. Frustrated and a little nervous, I climbed back into the car and checked my phone. No signal, of course. Still, I wasn't panicking, yet. I had a full tank of gas, blankets, and snacks. Worst case, I'd have to wait it out until someone came along. About an hour later, headlights cut through the swirling snow behind me. I felt a much-needed sense of relief as a pickup truck pulled up and stopped a few feet away. The driver's side door creaked open and a man stepped out. He was bundled up in a thick jacket and beanie. "You all right there?" he called out. I cracked my window. "Yeah, just stuck. I was hoping someone might come by." He nodded slowly, taking a step closer. I can give you a ride to town. It's a ways back, though. You sure you want to stay out here in this storm? His tone wasn't exactly menacing, but there was something about it that didn't sit right. Maybe it was the way he lingered on the words, like he was testing how desperate I was. Or maybe it was the way he kept looking at my car, like he was more interested in it than me. I'm okay, thanks, I'll wait here. I'm sure the storm will pass soon. He studied me for a moment. Storm's only getting worse, he said. Could be all night before anyone else comes by. I tightened my grip on the steering wheel. I'll take my chances. He stood there for a long beat, the snow piling on his shoulders. Then he nodded once, almost to himself, and said, "Suit yourself." But he didn't leave. Instead of climbing back into his truck, he walked around my car. At first, I thought he was just inspecting it, maybe trying to decide if he could tow me out. But then he circled again, slower this time, his hand brushing against the car's hood like he was marking his territory. I reached for the lock button and double-checked every door, just in case. Finally, he stopped near my window and leaned down, his face uncomfortably close. "You sure you don't want a ride?" he asked, his voice quieter now, almost coaxing. I didn't answer, just stared straight ahead. After a moment, he chuckled, a low, humorless sound, and walked back to his truck. I watched in the rearview mirror as he climbed in and started to reverse. My tension eased as the headlights disappeared into the storm. But then they stopped. The truck didn't drive away. Instead, it sat there, idling just a few feet behind me. Every few minutes, the engine would rev like the driver was impatient, but he never moved. I turned off my own headlights, hoping he'd think I was asleep or uninterested in whatever game he was playing. But deep down, I knew this wasn't over. Minutes stretched into an hour, and still, the truck didn't budge. My fingers hovered over my phone, useless as it was without service. I considered making a run for it, but the thought of leaving my car and facing him in the open was even more terrifying. At some point during the night, the truck finally left. I didn't see it go. I must have drifted off for a moment. But when I opened my eyes, the headlights were gone, and the storm had died down. A faint gray light seeped through the clouds, signaling dawn. I managed to inch my way out of the snowdrift. My legs were stiff, and I drove back to town. At a diner in Taos, I told the waitress what had happened. Her face paled as she leaned in closer. "You're lucky," she said. "There have been reports about a truck like that. Guy's been stopping stranded drivers, trying to get them into his vehicle. No one knows what he's after, but it's nothing good." The thought made my stomach turn. What would have happened if I'd accepted his offer? Or if I hadn't locked my doors? After that, I got rid of my car and opted for a 4x4 equipped with mud tires, a portable shovel, and a satellite phone. I still love the thrill of chasing a storm for the perfect shot, but I'm more cautious now. Because if there's one thing that night taught me, it's that the snow isn't the only thing hiding on those mountain roads. If these snowstorm nightmares sent shivers down your spine, don't forget to smash that like button and subscribe for more bone-chilling tales. What would you have done differently in these icy encounters? Share your thoughts in the comments. I'd love to hear them. Send this video to a friend who thinks snowstorms are all hot cocoa and sledding. They might need a reminder to trust their instincts. Stay warm, stay safe, and always keep an eye on those frosty shadows. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.